Psalm 32. David tried to hide his sin from God. But not only from God, also from himself. And it didn't work. Therefore, he wrote in Psalm 32, verses 3 through 5 these words. When I kept silent, my bones grew old. Through my groaning all the day long, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. I acknowledged my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. Sin is acid. The body is a styrofoam cup. You hold it in the cup, and it will destroy you. The best thing to do is to get it out of the cup. Get rid of it. And then take the cup to the manufacturer who can restore it as new. That is what confession is. We are throwing the acid of sin out of our styrofoam cup bodies and giving the bodies back to the Creator, back to the manufacturer who fixes the holes that have been left from the acid. Now tell me why it is that you will not acknowledge sin. God loves you. Confess your sin. In 1993, in England, two 10-year-old boys murdered a 2-year-old boy, James Bulger. And as the British police arrested these two 10-year-old boys, their stories were inconsistent, as you can, of course, imagine. And they just couldn't get their stories to match up. But eventually, one of the mothers said to her son that she would always love him. And finally, that boy confessed, I killed James. God knows our evil. Nevertheless, He loves us. When we confess to Him, He does not cease to love us, but His love grows, and our love grows toward Him in response. You know, you're doing really well in life when God is increasing in His love towards you and you're increasing in your love towards Him. How can you do better than that? And it all begins with the simple confession, I have sinned. Now tell me again why it is that we will not admit our sin. Making things right, it all starts with saying, I have sinned. That's the beginning of making things right with God and man. And it is, of course, important to make the right confession. lest the problem still exists. Let's consider some wrong words. If I have offended anyone, or if I have offended you, then please forgive me. You know something? You will never find an acceptable confession like that in the Bible. In Numbers chapter 22, the Bible shows Balaam starting the right way, but he did not carry it through. Instead, he added words that showed that he really did not comprehend his sin. After an angel had confronted him when he was going to a king by the name of King Balak, who was hoping that Balaam would curse Israel, and of course God didn't want that done, so he sent the angel to stop Balaam. And when Balaam finally realized what he had done, he said this in verse 34, "I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back." Well, he said the right words there at the beginning, but he didn't understand what his sin was. He thought his sin was being angry at his donkey who wouldn't go on because he saw the angel. He didn't recognize his sin was in the love of money, trying to get money and other riches and wealth out of Balak, you know, that he had promised to him if he would curse Israel. And then he said to the angel, "If it displeases you, I'll turn back." Balaam, of course it displeased the angel. Of course it displeased God who sent the angel. Why do you think he was standing in the pathway with his sword drawn, ready to kill you, but your donkey saved your life by turning and going another direction? With his confession of, "I have sinned," he should have stopped right there and said, "I'm going back home. Forget it, Balak. I don't care what you offer. I'm back home. That's it. Don't ever talk to me again." But when someone says, "If I have offended anyone," he is not really sure that he has done anything wrong. I mean, why then say anything? Well, it's probably because that person knows that he has a problem with someone, or maybe the church or a group of people, and suspects that he might have done something to cause the problem, or at least to add to it, but he's not convinced, or doesn't want to admit it or something, and so he thinks this is the way to solve it. But hey, have you done something wrong or not? If you have, confess it. If not, you have nothing to confess. Another one. "I was wrong, but so were you." "I was wrong, but I'm not the only one who was at fault." Well, of course, what does that do? That still is not taking full responsibility for my part, and it's still creating the problem, feeding to the problem. It's still causing the other person to be on the defensive. You know, the other person may have been wrong. There's no doubt about it. But their wrong does not justify my wrong. So when I do wrong, I need to say, "You know what? I was wrong. I've sinned." And then take it from there. "I'm sorry" is good, but it needs to go further. Well, you're sorry for what? Did you do something wrong? If so, say so. Sometimes people are not sorry that they did anything wrong. They're just sorry that there's a problem. So what we need to do is follow the biblical example of how confession was done. And that's what I'm trying to show you this morning. Sometimes people have the right words, but the wrong actions. For example, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, in the book of Exodus, said the right words, but he did not back them up with the right actions. I mean, what good are words without the corresponding actions? In Exodus chapter 9, during, I think it was after the sixth plague had been poured out on Egypt, he said this in verse 27 to Moses and Aaron. I have sinned this time. The Lord is righteous, and my people and I are wicked. Man, he was right on target with those words. Yet you know that there were not six plagues, or seven, whichever one this happened at. Rather, there were 10 plagues that came upon Egypt. Which means that he didn't back up his confession with actions. He went back into his sin, and so God kept on pouring out the plagues on Egypt. But right there, that should have ended the controversy between God and Pharaoh. He said, I've sinned. The Lord is righteous. I'm wicked. Deal done, Pharaoh. Thank you. Now, let our people go. And he said, no. I don't want that. So again, in the 10th chapter, you'll read this in verse 16, when he again called for Moses and Aaron, and he said this, I have sinned against the Lord your God and you, and against you. Again, his words are right on target. But it's the same story as the preceding passage. I have sinned acknowledges, at least it appears that way, that he understood the full responsibility for his sin, and yet afterwards he makes us think that he didn't understand. But because he continued to refuse to let Israel go. Right words, but wrong actions. How about King Saul? In 1 Samuel chapter 26, King Saul said the right words to one man. But he should have said the right words to God about his whole life. After he had been trying to kill David, and then David had an opportunity to kill Saul, and David spared Saul's life, and Saul learned about it, here's what happens in verse 21. I have sinned, Saul said to David. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly. Well, why could Saul not say the same thing to God? Why couldn't he say to God, I have sinned? It's because some people can see how they did the wrong thing in a given situation, but they cannot see how that is characteristic of their lives. So yes, they got caught in this case, and so they're going to say, I'm sorry to you, for I have sinned. I was in the wrong. Please forgive me. But they don't get it yet. That this is how your whole life is. And that's how Saul was. Judas. Matthew 27. Has the sad, sad words of Judas because he said the right words also. But he did not do what he knew he could do. He knew of the mercy and compassion of Jesus Christ. He had witnessed it for 3.5 years. But his sin overwhelmed him. And so in Matthew 27 and verse 4, he said to the Jewish leaders who paid him to betray Jesus, to us, you see to it. And of course, Judas threw the money down in the temple and went out and hung himself. Could he have gone to Jesus, confessed his sin, repented, and Jesus forgive him? I have no doubt about it. If Jesus could forgive the people who crucified him, He could certainly have forgiven Judas. But the sin of Judas just overwhelmed him. And he couldn't stand it. And he took his life. Oh, Judas, great was your sin. Greater still is the grace of God. Embrace grace as grace embraces you. Next, right words, but wrong attitude. Remember Balaam again that I referred to earlier? Why did he say, "Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back"? He confessed the right words, but he was hoping God would change his mind. See, Balak offered him that huge sum of wealth if he would just curse Israel. And Balaam knew he couldn't change God's words. If God said, "I'm not going to curse him," instead, "I want you to bless him," Balaam knew that's what he had to say. But he kept going back to God, hoping God would change his mind. And even after this encounter with the angel, he was hoping, maybe God has reconsidered here and he'll let me go and curse Israel so Balak will give me this wealth he's promised. But listen, man, if you're going back to Balak, Balaam, you know, you're going to sin. If going to him the first time was sin, going to him the second time is sin. If you really believe you've sinned, then go home. Why would it displease God before but not now or later? I think what it is sometimes we try to play games with our confessions. But both people and God can see right through our game playing. If you have sinned, say so and repent. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, I think you'll see King Saul trying to play games because he said just what he had to say to get what he wanted. He said the right words, but his heart was all wrong. He didn't have the right attitude, and so he didn't follow it up with the right words or the right actions. After Samuel the judge revealed to Saul how he had sinned, here's what happens in verse 30. King Saul said, "I have sinned." I wish it had stopped right there. But he continued, "Yet honor me now before the elders of my people and before Israel, and return with me that I may worship the Lord your God." Do you see Saul's heart? He said the magical words, but then he added some other words that showed his attitude was not right. Saul, if you have sinned, you do not deserve such honor. If you have sinned, do not demand to be used in your former capacity. Let that be up to God or to others who may be in authority. Right words, right actions, right attitudes. Let's take a look at that now. Look at the life of David. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, the man who had a heart like God's did a horrible thing. And God saw it. And God sent Nathan the prophet to David to reveal to David that God knew the whole thing. It was all exposed before God. God knew that David had committed adultery with Bathsheba and then had her husband killed. And when that was revealed to David, he was broken up real bad. In 2 Samuel 12 and verse 13, he said to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And you don't hear him then saying, Yet honor me now before the elders, before all Israel, so that I can, you know, still retain my position. Now here's what's interesting, what happens next. And Nathan said to David, the Lord has also put away your sin. You shall not die. Nathan said that. Of course, God had Nathan say that to David, because he knew what David was thinking. David knew the law, and the law said he was worthy of death. David knew that. And I'm sure that now when he realized how much he had offended the great God of heaven, he was terrified. So he didn't say, well, if I've offended you, Lord, forgive me. He didn't have words without actions. There was no attempt to manipulate God. No demands to be used as before. But he knew what should have been coming. And so Nathan, in this case, assured him that that wasn't going to happen. Later, in 2 Samuel 24, King David's heart was lifted up high, and he believed that his great power as a king was residing in his military strength rather than in the Lord. And when he had realized what he had done, he confessed. And in 2 Samuel 24, verse 10, you'll find this. And David's heart condemned him after he had numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. David blamed no one but himself. He ceased sinning. He confessed his sin. He repented, changing his way of life and throwing himself upon the mercy of God. He did not make any demands or expect good from God. Nehemiah, in Nehemiah chapter 1, also showed a broken spirit with his words. Nehemiah chapter 1, I believe, records one of the most beautiful prayers of all time. And its beauty is seen in the broken spirit of Nehemiah. And he had the right words, the right actions, and the right attitude. He did not demand anything from God, but humbly submitted himself to God for God's service and for the service of God's people. Listen to this part of the prayer in verse 6. He prayed to God, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess. He says, I'm confessing the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned. Why is it so good to say, I have sinned? Well, simply admitting that we have sinned brings hope. Listen to these two passages, first from the book of Psalms and then from the prophet Micah. Psalm 41, verse 4, shows David throwing himself at the mercy of God. Verse 4 of Psalm 41 says, I said, Lord, be merciful to me. Heal my soul, for I have sinned against you. Heal my soul, for I have sinned against you. And then the words of Micah 7, verse 9. Here's a man of God who recognized sin, and was also willing to bear the consequences of it. But he knew there was hope. That's why David in Psalm 41 said, God, heal me. And there was hope. He knew that if he confessed, there was hope for a healing. And that's what goes on in Micah 7, verse 9. He said, I will bear the indignation of the Lord because I have sinned against him. Until he pleads my case and executes justice for me, he will bring me forth to the light. I will see his righteousness. I've sinned, so I'll bear God's indignation. But I know that by confessing to him that I have sinned, that he'll bring me to the light and I'll see him. I'll get to see God in his righteousness. And it's that last passage that now leads me on what to do about it. When I have sinned and I say the right words, you know, what else is involved? This is where Luke 15, the parable of the prodigal son, comes in. Luke 15 has this parable that Jesus gave, which shows the perfect attitude, actions, and admission. A young man had asked his father for his part of the inheritance, and the father gave it. And the son went away and used all that money on wild living, primarily on prostitutes. When a famine hit the faraway land to where he had traveled, he was left with nothing. And so he went to one of the local citizens who hired him to feed the swine. And this boy, this young man, who once had it so good at home, and who then had all this money and could have done good things with it but wasted it, he's now in a situation where he's feeding pigs, and he was so hungry that he was ready to push them out of the way and eat their food. The Bible says that he would have gladly eaten the swine's food. Get out of here, pig. I want some of that. Leave some for me. You guys eat like pigs. You know that? And that's how low he got. I mean, listen to verse 16. Jesus said, and he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. And then he realized what he had done and what had happened to him. He realized the way, what is wrong with me? I used to live at home, and man, I had it good there. I didn't think I did, and I couldn't wait to get out of the house. And now look what I've done to my life. And so here's what he said in verses 17 to 19. Jesus introduced it by saying, but when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants, have bread enough and to spare? Man, they have leftovers after dinner. And I perish with hunger. I'm eating the leftovers that they want to throw to the pigs. Verse 18. I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And he made good on his words. He's got the right attitude. He's rehearsed the right words. Is he going to do anything about it? Yep. Verses 20 and 21. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son didn't say or think to himself, "Ah, I've been accepted. I don't have to admit my wrong." Verse 21, and the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son." Wow. Listen to what the young man didn't do. He did not speculate, "You know, Father, if I've offended you, please accept me back here at home." He did not cast blame on his father, on his brother, on the schools, on the government, or anything else we tend to blame. He did not speak nebulously, just saying, "I'm sorry." But he confessed bluntly and boldly, "I have sinned." He took full responsibility. He knew that he had sinned against heaven and against his father, making him, in his eyes, unworthy to be the son of his father. He didn't even ask to be the son anymore. He said, "Dad, I just want to be a hired servant. I know they've got it better than the way I've been living. That's all I want." He didn't demand his old position. He did not demand that things be as they were before. And my opinion is that if the father had accepted him as a hired servant, the son would not have wondered why he was not being used as he was before. He was not in such a position. And the reason I think that is because even after the glad welcome of his father, he still saw himself as unworthy. I mean, look, he goes home, his father sees him, runs out to meet him, falls on his neck, kisses him, is obviously very happy to have his son back, and the son still says, "I'm unworthy to be your son." I guess what I'm saying with all these scriptures, or maybe really what the Lord is showing us with all these scriptures, is there has to be evidence of a broken heart. The words are good. We've got to have the right words that will come from a heart that is truly broken, that says, I realize what I've done. "He who is eager for things to be as they were before does not understand the nature of sin." It's not in our position to say, "I want it like it was before." That's up to God, and perhaps the people we've sinned against, for them to decide how things shall then be. We can just say, "I have sinned. I beg you, please forgive me." Christian, have you sinned? Quit trying to fool God, and maybe in some cases, quit trying to fool your brethren. Be open and honest. Confess your sin, and then show a changed life. Are you not a Christian? God loves you, and He wants you to change your life right now. He wants you to do it when you're ready, but He wants that time to be now. And I think once you get embraced by the Lord, you'll think, "How come I didn't do this sooner?" And maybe you're thinking to yourself, "Okay, I am ready. What do I do next?" Well, you need to go through such a radical change that you need to be born again, like you're a new person. And so we have to bury you in water, and then we'll bring you up as a new person. You'll be just like that father and that son in the prodigal son parable. He'll be glad to have you. You may think, I'm not worthy to be here. I'm not worthy of heaven. I'm not worthy of anything. But if He wants me, man, He can have me. Are you ready to be baptized? If so, come forward as we stand and sing.